Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Say what you want about this market. It always lets you in. You just have to be willing to take the chance.
Buy, buy, buy!
If you do, sometimes you can make a great deal of money. But you need to believe. You need to have conviction, or else it's impossible to pull the trigger. Now, today, tech unraveled with Dow advancing 80 points, the S&P slipping 0.25%, but the Nasdaq plunging more than 1%. We'll get to that in a moment. First, though, let's do something positive. I want to talk about a couple of other stories. Stories that show you what happens when you invest in well-known, great American companies with beaten-down stocks. Investing 101 for all I've had deal with stocks that go down. And this time, if you listen to what I'm about to say, you will know what to do. And you'll never view a downturn the same again. So let's start with the star of the day. And that's Charitable Trust Core Holding, Johnson & Johnson. For as long as I've been in the business, J&J has been a great stock to own. There's a reason it has a AAA credit rating, even better than the U.S. government. But a couple of years ago, we started hearing about a link between J&J's talcum powder and ovarian cancer. Specifically claims that their talc had traces of asbestos in it. And asbestos, of course, is one of the most dangerous chemicals ever, okay? From a health perspective, and in this case, from a legal risk perspective, too. If your company sells a product that turns out to contain asbestos, it's almost impossible to beat the lawsuits, especially if there are any smoking gun memos in your files from someone in authority who might have even posited that there could be a tiny amount, just a trace of asbestos in an occasional patch, a batch of the product, and posited they did at J&J, as any thorough company would have people do it. Now, you might remember J&J's former CEO, Alex Gorsky, coming on this show to deny the allegations. Allegations that have been repeated endlessly by the press, particularly by Reuters, in a series of deep investigations and multiple follow-ups. No matter, once the drumbeat starts, it's very easy for plaintiffs' lawyers to recruit very, very sick people. People whom juries understandably find very sympathetic. Who wouldn't? Whether or not J&J's talc contained asbestos, you don't want to fight that kind of case in court if you can avoid it, because the plaintiffs are people you just want to help in any way you can, even if J&J may not have had asbestos in their powder. At the time, we chose to buy the stock from Charitable Trust, take a little risk there, which you can follow by joining the CNBC Investing Club, because we thought there was no way J&J could be permanently impaired by these claims. And when our view triumphed, we thought the stock would soar. Management believed they had a clever path out of the jam, creating a bankrupt entity funded with cash that could be used to directly pay the aggrieved, something a federal bankruptcy judge in New Jersey was willing to sign off on. We saw it as an amazing opportunity because the litigation was keeping a lid on what we thought would be a terrific stock once Johnson & Johnson finished splitting into a consumer packaged goods company. You think about this, Neutrogena, Band-Aids, Tylenol, and a separate pharma and medical device business, a pristine one. With the stock at about 170 when we started buying, we had visions of $200 dancing in our heads. But then the Third Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that J&J's bankrupt spinoff gambit was illegal. And the next thing you know, the stock's in the low 150s. So the Chapel Trust was sitting on a huge loss, and one that that pained me nightly.
The House of Pain.
And this is when it pays to have conviction in amazing American companies. Because we knew that J&J would be smart enough to come up with a way to preserve their franchise. Why? Because that's what they've always done. They've always been bankable. Bankable companies tend to stay bankable. And sure enough, last night at the close of trading, J&J announced a settlement with the most of the talc claimants, what we call supermajority. Now, the cost is almost $9 billion. I know, a lot of money. But that's not what's important for you as a stockholder. What matters is the existential threat to the enterprise has now been taken off the table. So now the stock is free, at least to run above the $168 level where it was trading when the bankruptcy gambit was struck down. Although I think it can work its way back to 186, it's peaked for nearly a year ago. And you know what? After the split up, I think it'll exceed that level. And that's why I told club members to buy it aggressively, even up here at 165. Second one, this is one that I think is so sensational. I've been saying it. I was early, then I was late, then I was early again. And I'm talking about Eli Lilly. Not that long ago, do you know that Eli Lilly was the single worst performing stock of the S&P 500 at one point this year? The worst. Yep, number 500, having fallen, and the stock having fallen from 375 down to 310. Why? Really no reason whatsoever. Other than it moved up too much in anticipation of a potentially revolutionary diabetes and maybe weight loss drug called Mounjaro. I mean, we all thought it was going to charge hard out of the gate. And that's the reason why people were excited. I mean, this thing can cause 15% weight loss in a very short period of time. But it hasn't been approved by the FDA for weight reduction yet, even as the competing drug, Wegovy, from Novo Nordisk, has. So the stock got ahead of itself and it was crushed as investors started believing that the Fed could engineer a soft landing, which makes the defense of drug stocks, as we know, much less attractive. People can't flee these stocks fast enough
in a rotation. Sell.
Once again, though, you had to buy the dip. Why? Because it's Eli Lilly. And Eli Lilly's not a one-trick pony. It's also working on a revolutionary Alzheimer's drug that we heard today from one research house that could pop the stock by 10%. Now Lilly is all the way back to 362, erasing that whole decline. We're only on day two of a rotation into the safety stocks. They usually last 3 to 4 days and then rest. I think that's going to happen again. Finally, there's one of my favorites for all of 2023, and that's Procter & Gamble. Coming in this year, Procter & Gamble got three big breaks. Cost of transportation peak, cost of raw ingredients plummeted, and the dollar stopped going higher. And yet, what did the stock do? Well, despite all these positives, the stock got body slammed. Why? Rotation. Now, with the yield of the 10-year Treasury at a multi-month low, meaning less competition for Procter's 2.4% yield, there's a grudging recognition that this stock could just be too cheap. Sure, at $151 as well, if it's last month's lows of $136. But we still haven't even heard a peep out of a single analyst saying good things. I think Procter goes higher, maybe much higher, as it's the king of consumer products goods, and its costs are coming down. But it ain't going to cut the price to you at the supermarket. What do all these things have in common? How about the fact that they're amazing American companies with stocks that get cheaper as they go down? And that's something you can't say about commodity producers or companies with hideous balance sheets, or certainly not with tech startups with no earnings, and definitely not of anything that's enterprise software. Now, as I told listeners of our home stretch program for the CBC Investing Club, it runs around 2:30. We're on watch for the best techs that are being put through the rotational meat grinder because they'll be next. They're the next Lilly, Procter & Gamble, and J&J. Buy low to sell high. Now, it's a little trickier because they haven't come in much yet. It's too early. What matters is we're only on day two of the tech sell-off. Many of these are just getting hit. Oh, they're going to roll over. You got plenty of time. We know what to buy on the way down because we genuinely know what's doing well. It's Microsoft, NVIDIA, AMD, Apple, just to name a few. We have many more for the club. Now, there are some areas that are just untouchable regardless of how low they go. I'm not going to tell you to buy any banks. They're the reason why we have the storm rotation. Bankers were fools, regulators knaves. And there are other areas that I think are just too hard because you might have some multi-day underperformance, many of the industrials. People are worried about potential order decline, even as we haven't seen any signs of it yet. I'd argue many of the industrials will do just fine, even in a slowdown, because there's so much federal largesse headed their way. But their stocks are still at risk. Of course, there's nothing more unnerving than buying a stock on the way down. But these terrific American companies, they're not falling knives. They're shares of incredible businesses that got too cheap. They got too cheap because every now and then the market throws an absurd sale like we had this very winter. Bottom line, sometimes you just need to hold your nose and buy. Just be sure you don't start too early. And remember, this method only works if the companies are making money, their balance sheets are good, managers have experienced downturns, and have come out on the other side. That's what you buy. Jeff in New York, Jeff.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How about you?
Good, a big fan. And I just wanted to ask you, I know you've kind of touched on this in the past, but with Nat Gas, last year in December, when it was, you know, up at 10 or whatever it was, it looked like manipulation from hedge funds, et cetera. They didn't get away with it, obviously, and now it's down at 2. And it looks like the same thing's happening down here. And that I just wondering your opinion on where you see it going. If you think this is natural movement with Freeport being
open.
Sure.
No, Jeff, we had EQT on recently, and I'm really close to the natural gas industry. And I would tell you this. I think that $2 is still not the floor. I think you probably go to $1.75. That's about where everybody starts saying, you know what, we can't get money here at all. Until Freeport, the giant LNG facility, will start going in full, and the world isn't so full of natural gas. But we need a real hot summer to get that baby back to $3. Real hot. All right, sometimes you just need to hold your nose and buy into weakness of only high-quality companies. We did it with the drugs. We're soon going to do it with the tax. Not yet. Nail Money Tonight. The consumer packaged goods space has been heating up. So fresh off the earnings, I'm going to be learning about ConAgra and what they see. Then we're continuing our series on value versus value trap by taking a look at the steel players to see if they're worth owning. And FedEx. FedEx has a new plan, combining all of its operating businesses into one. I'm going to sit down with the CEO to find out more, so stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This morning, we've got a real important quarter from ConAgra Brands, CAG, the packaged food powerhouse you know as Bird's Eye, Marie Callender, Healthy Choice, Slim Jim, Orville Redenbacher, Hebrew National, and many others. I say it's important because food inflation remains stubbornly high. Packaged food, arguably the worst component. Got to get these prices down. Technically, ConAgra posted a mixed set of numbers with slightly lower than expected organic growth, but their margins came in extremely strong, which allowed them to deliver a 12-cent earnings beat off a 64-cent basis. Same time, management slightly lowered the full-year organic growth, but it raised their earnings forecast. Basic story here is that ConAgra's price increases have hurt volumes, but not enough to put a dent in their dramatically increased profitability. They had 31% earnings growth, for heaven's sake. No wonder the stock rallied today. So can they continue with this trajectory? Let's check in with Sean Connolly, the president and CEO of ConAgra Brands, get a better in the quarter and what's next. Mr. Connolly, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me.
All right, so this was a difficult quarter for most people who are not in the business to understand, because you spent a huge time talking about something called elasticity. Unless you took it in economics or listened to your call, what you might not realize is that when you raise price, you lose some volume, but you lost far less volume than your competitors on the price increases.
Well, it's hard to believe, Jim, but we've had roughly 30% cost inflation over the last 3 years, and that equates to almost $2.5 billion in cost inflation. And when that happens, you've got a price to protect margins, because margins are the things that's the money that fuels your innovation program. And that's what we're all about at ConAgra, is innovation and sustainable growth. But you have to recover margins in order to do that, and you've got to take price. Now, you do plan for some volume loss temporarily as consumers adapt to that new pricing. But as you point out, the elasticities of demand, or the consumer response to the higher pricing, has been benign versus historical norms. And that's why we were able to recover as much margin as we did for the second straight quarter and raise our profitability guidance on the year. And sales still remain strong. Our outlook for the full year for sales is still 7 to 7.5% growth, and that's a very strong year.
But you sound like, as you promised when you were on last, that really you don't need any more price increases, but you're not seeing the raw costs go down yet.
Yeah, that's an important distinction, because a lot of people are talking about deflation. Well, deflation isn't here yet. We're in the back half of our fiscal year. In the back half of our year, we're still averaging about 6% inflation. So that's inflationary. We don't need to take additional pricing to cover that at this point. The pricing that we have in the market should be sufficient. Now, let's hope we don't get another spike in inflation, but right now we don't see it. So inflation is moderated. The pricing actions for now are done. We're ramping up our productivity programs. And what that means is we can get back in the business of driving the business through growth and innovation.
All right, so let's drill down, because I want people at home to like your stock, because as I have for many years, since you came in. I want to talk popcorn. Okay, people, because it's a great microcosm of what you're doing. People are snacking more at home. It's obviously cheaper to go stay home, have dinner at home, watch Netflix rather than go out. But they are using every single one of your different kinds of popcorns, both Angie, but also the microwave. Tell us about innovation there, because people don't realize you are innovative.
Yeah, we've got one of the biggest popcorn platforms in all of North America. And frankly, we've had two structural headwinds since COVID that has helped our business, especially in frozen and in snacking on businesses like popcorn. And those structural tailwinds are more working from home, which helps our frozen lunch business, and more entertainment at home. People aren't going out to the theater as much. They're streaming their shows at home. And when they do that, they snack at home. And what's better when you're watching something on TV at home than to make popcorn out of a bag with Angie's Boom Chicka Pop, our new Act 2 Butter Lovers. You would be a big fan of that. And of course, microwaving Orville Redenbacher. All that's great. I suggest that you binge watch Mayor of Kingstown, get one of our new Act 2 Butter Lovers popcorn, and you'll be off to the races.
Were you in my house? I did it, and I used some of those new popcorns that you sent me, and that's what we did. And hey, by the way, let's hope that Renner comes out of all this so we have a sequel, right? We need him to come back and
Absolutely.
Come back strong. Now, I want to go over a couple of things that I think people don't realize. You sent us a boatload of crazy seeds. My kids love them. I never thought of eating a seed in my life. I plant them. You know, I like to grow. Talk about the seed category, which has exploded.
Well, seeds are a phenomenal business. With this whole low-carb movement, people want protein in their snacks, and they want to manage carbs. And we've got two of the best businesses to deliver on those benefits. We've got Slim Jim and Duke's Meat Sticks, and we've got our seeds business with the Great David brand and also Biggs. And seeds, you know, hit a rough spot during COVID, because a lot of the seed usage is this time of year in baseball season. And if you think about it, during COVID, baseball teams weren't out on the field. So that really hurt our seeds business when we lost a season or two of baseball. Well, now baseball is back and our seeds business is back as well.
Okay, so Sean, just to wrap up, what I see here is that you have been able to take the cost, margins are coming through. I always love the fact that you like dividends and that this yields one of the highest yields in the category. I know it's up to the board, but when I see these numbers, I'm thinking, stay tuned. We could get a dividend increase here.
Yeah, that's always been part of our playbook, Jim. Strong dividends, occasional buybacks, occasional bolt-on acquisitions. It's all fair game, and we hear you, and we like to pay out a healthy dividend, and that's what we do.
Well, that's why we like your stock. I like to sleep at night, too, which I can do. And send those other popcorns to everybody. Put them in the store. They're dynamite. And we'll watch the sequel with Jeremy Renner, I promise. Okay?
Excellent.
Excellent. Sean Colley's presidency of ConAgra Brands. It was a nice quarter. Good dividend and sleep at night. No banks here, by the way. No regional banks with this man. Just straight out money. Stay with Kramer.
Coming up,
Is there value in metal, or are these stocks just a steel trap? Cramer pours over P/E ratios. Next.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All week, we've been highlighting the cyclical series where stocks seem absurdly cheap, trading at single-digit price-to-earnings multiples, something that usually represents real value, right? But often they're value traps, a term you hear on air quite a bit, but it seems to elude many of you, and I don't blame you. It's real hard. So let's talk about a group that is viewed as quintessential value trap on the street. Let's talk about the steelmakers. The steel business seems so simple, doesn't it? You take some iron, some coal, you melt it down, smash it into shape, sell them for more than your raw costs. Very economics 101. In reality, though, the steel business is tremendously complex with a huge amount of technology. You need to satisfy many masters with various different grades, all while monitoring for subsidized imports from countries that are eager to wipe us out. And most important, you got to spend to keep up to date, lest you become like the legion of steelmakers that failed this country because they overpaid on labor and underpaid on digitization and automation. Back when I worked at Goldman Sachs, we were taught the steel industry what matters is leverage. They have huge fixed costs. Building and maintaining a steel mill ain't cheap. But as the price of steel rises, that means their earnings can grow exponentially higher because of those fixed costs. And that's how the old Bethlehem Steel could see its earnings, say, jump from 1 year, $2, to next year, 10 times that. By the same token, though, when steel prices go down, the earnings can evaporate overnight. And Bethlehem Steel, sadly, it couldn't keep up with the times. It was so bloated and so poorly run, overpaid its executives, so short-sighted. It's amazing these guys actually held out to 2001 before filing for bankruptcy. We lived close by the headquarters at one point in my life, and a cat adopted us. We named her Bessie. Yeah, that's the old nickname for Bethlehem Steel stock. I like to name my pets after my best trades. Back then, we made a fortune shorting Bethlehem Steel aggressively. This was a year where the street expected them to earn $25 a share. But the company actually ended up losing money. That's a value trap. Ever since then, I have been deeply suspicious of the earnings estimates for all steelmakers. They're just too hard to calculate, with the sole exception of Nucor, the biggest and the best, with 50 straight years of dividend boost. This is a steel company. Perfect balance sheet, superior technology. Nucor outlasted pretty much all the other American steelmakers. Sure, U.S. Steel still exists, and sometimes it does well. But the days when Hyman Roth could crow to Michael Corleone, "We are bigger than U.S. Steel," seem downright quaint. Just the Godfather 2 laugh line for the remaining few who follow the steel industry. However, in the last few years, a new player has arrived on the scene. Well, not really new, because its name is Cleveland Cliffs, and that was around since 1847. Originally, it was an iron mining company, but it's now number two in the steel industry after a takeover spree that took its revenues, get this, from $2 billion in 2019 to $23 billion last year, bigger than Hyman Roth's Miami Syndicate. I want to consider Nucor and Cleveland Cliffs for tonight's value test, okay? Value versus value traps, because they're fascinating contrasts that both seem strangely misunderstood by the experts who cover them. Bizarrely, you know what? They don't have a lot in common. Cleveland Cliffs is an amalgam of companies that were recently acquired, including ArcelorMittal USA and AK Steel, two firms many thought were just wasting assets not that long ago. But under the brilliant and dynamic leadership of CEO Lorenzo Gonzalez, this amalgamation of work, it is just working. Cleveland Cliffs dominates auto industry steel. Amazing. and it's nicely profitable in that business. They make flat rolled carbon steel, stainless steel, electric plate, a tin plate, among other grades. While the business is still deeply cyclical, it's not some lousy commodity steel maker anymore. Not just anybody can make this stuff. There's a moat here. Plus, they spend fortunes paying down debt for their two big acquisitions and reduced unfunded pensions. They are justifiably proud of those achievements. Nucor, on the other hand, is even cyclical. It's a growth company. It's a growth company in the steel business. Nucor's got all sorts of specialized grades that can be used for everything from towers to bridges to non-residential construction, consumer durables, oil and gas, warehouses, and, of course, the auto industry. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a proprietary steelmaker, but it's as close as one you're ever going to get. Here's what Nucor and Cleveland-Cliffs do have in common, though. And this is what you should care about. They both trade at hideously low price-to-earnings multiples. Cliffs sells for 6 times trailing earnings, Nucor at 5 times. That's because neither company can seem to prove to analysts that they'll do just fine in a downturn, like the coming one. I find both those multiples insulting, even as I recognize that estimates have to come down for these two if the economy keeps slowing, because even as Cliffs got price increases from the auto companies, Verge Steel, the other grades could get hurt badly, and Nucor just had the lower numbers since they announced their numbers a few weeks ago. Wall Street's convinced that Cleveland-Cliffs, which made $5.35 per share in 2021 and then $2.55 last year, will only earn $2.04 this year, despite managers' protestations to the contrary. They say they could have a much better year. Nucor actually had its best earnings year ever in 2022, despite the Fed's repeated attempts to cool down the economy. That's extraordinary. These guys made $28.79 per share. The analysts expect that to almost get cut in half, down to $14.75. Then next year, they're only looking for $11.83. Wow, that's miserable. Look at that. Well, that's, isn't this there? Look what they can do. You can go from 28 to 14 to 11. That's what the street says they're going to do. Look, if you believe we can avoid a true recession this year and the auto sales will actually hold up, then Cleveland-Cliffs between 15 and 16 bucks and with this kind of earnings estimate is still an okay to buy situation. There's so much skepticism about this company, but if the auto companies merely stay flat in their production, the price increases that they've been able to put through at Cliffs should lead to an up year for earnings, not a down year. That said, if you're going to own a steelmaker, just go to the best. Just go to Nucor. Because I think it's been set up for this moment. Sure, it came up a little short when it pre-announced earnings a few weeks ago, and it will be mighty hard to beat last year's incredible numbers. Can't really happen. But you never know with Nucor. It's just that good. Last year, the most bullish analysts on the street thought it could earn no more than $12 a share. I'm sure that was the estimate. Yet it more than doubled that bullish analyst number. Plus, Nucor keeps pushing the envelope with new plants of highly specialized steel and small acquisitions that are immediately additive to earnings. What I like best about it, though, is that when we start seeing all that federal infrastructure spending that's been earmarked for bridges and roads and semiconductor plants, alternative energy systems, Nucor will provide the lion's share of that steel. And that's where they really are. That's the sweet spot for them, is the Fed money. Yes, 2023 may not be perfect, but the company will stand there and mint money and buy back stock while it waits. Do you know in the last 7 years, Nucor's taken share count from 319 million to 255 million? And once we get to 2024, it's going to turn into a great secular green growth story. So then the question becomes, with all the great companies out there, why would you ever want to buy either one of these two? Well, if you think the economy can avoid a serious downturn and auto sales can stay strong, then you should consider Cleveland-Cliffs, because the CEO is a maniacal cost cutter who's developed a reputation for making quality steel. The leverage is there. They're going to make a killing if the Fed can engineer soft landing. Nucor's different. You buy this one because, like any growth company, it continues to expand and improve in tougher times, creating better proprietary products and then using them to dominate niche markets. The idea that a steelmaker could have 50 consecutive years of dividend boosts, not cuts like the other guys, but boosts, while maintaining a beautiful balance sheet is unlike anything this challenging industry has ever seen. Bottom line, Cleveland-Cliffs is a trade if you think Wall Street's underestimating the strength of this economy. But Nucor's a long-term investment for anyone who wants what's called a growth industrial. There are only a handful of smokestack stocks you can say that about in the entire world. And of those, Nucor may be numero uno. Let's go to Mac in New Jersey. Mac. Mac.
Hey, Jim. Booyah, dude, from the beach in New Jersey.
Which beach?
Brielle.
Oh, man, we got a place in Ocean Grove. Come by and see me. What's going on?
Party. Thanks for helping the little guys.
That's it. That's what it's about. Because I was little. And I'm getting little as I get older, which is really kind of driving me crazy. What's up?
You'll get back. Well, I bought some shares of Texas Instruments a few weeks ago, and the stock goes up and the stock goes down. I'm wondering, with chip manufacturing coming back to the U.S., should I keep riding the wave? Or should I bail out?
You must. No. You actually want to buy Texan. Here's why. Because they are in the one part, Internet of Things, industrial semis that have not had a downturn. And I actually don't think they're going to have one. I think you're in the sweet spot there. By the way, Analog Devices, I'm going to give you two for Analog Devices, because he's got, you know, he's got a place to be near me. Analog Devices and Texas Instruments are both great. Cleveland Cliffs is a trade if you think Wall Street's underestimating the strength of the economy.
Bye.
And by Nucor is a long-term investment.
House pleasure.
For anyone who wants to grow with industrial, much more abundant. Pretty much just with FedEx. After announcing a consolidation effort that brings all the company's business units into one, I'm discussing the transformation plans with the CEO. Then the stock of On Holding has been running. So could the company be the next Nike, or is that comparison just insane? I'll give you my take. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. This will be the most exciting interview you have seen in a long time. Just over 6 months ago, FedEx new CEO Rob Subramanian came on our show. He issued a dire warning about the economy. He was ahead of everyone. FedEx had just pre-announced a large earnings shortfall. We thought we were witnessing the start of a worldwide recession. We did get a real early call about the slowdown. Next day, stock lost 21% of its value. Darn thing fell another 20 bucks before finding a bottom in September. What a buying opportunity. Broader market did get obliterated. These guys started coming back. It was amazing. FedEx has now rallied, get this, 5 of the last 6 months. It only went down in December. The stock is up 62% from September lows. In fact, it's up 25 bucks from where it was trading when he gave us that dire forecast. So what the heck happened? And what's going to happen in the future, which is far more important? We got to speak to Raj Subramanian right now. Okay, so Raj, this was an incredible day. I'll tell you what. You tell me I'm wrong. I hear new CEOs come in all the time. It's always the same. We got cost-cutting. This was not a cost-cutting day. This was a reinvention day. This was a way to make a terrific company into something I've never seen before. Tell us about this like you took it over, like you did an M&A takeover of this company.
Well, Jim, thank you for having me on the show today. It's indeed a very exciting day for FedEx. We are on the cusp of our 50th anniversary. What we announced today was that we are consolidating our operating companies, FedEx Express, FedEx Ground, and FedEx Services, into one company, which is FedEx Corporation, or under FedEx Express as a whole company now. And with one company, we are able to be much more effective and efficient in the way
that's separate there. Yeah. People need to know. You were not one company. We were listed on the conference call with three companies. It's done.
Yes. So this is going to be effective June 1 of 2024. And we're going to make the surface transportation in North America under one head, and all the airline and the international business under the head. This is very important for us because this is a critical enabler for the transformation program that is underway, and to get to this network 2.0 in a couple of years. You know, just make it real for you. Today, in many neighborhoods, you can see a FedEx Express van and a FedEx Ground van delivering residential packages. In this new world, there'll be one van. There'll be one van, one neighborhood.
Will that mean that the costs for each of these different companies comes under one roof? Digitization on roof, procurement under one roof, savings.
We're definitely going to get significantly more efficient. You said all the points here. We have common technology platform that enables us now to make this possible. Right. And then, of course, a lot of these corporate functions like procurement, technology, some of these back office functions, now we're able to make it much, much more efficient
and
effective.
But the number you put out, you're talking about for Drive, your committee, you're talking about $4 billion in savings? Most companies could never have that much in savings.
Well, the $4 billion in savings happens because of the rigor and the urgency with which you're attacking. You know, when I came on the show last time, I told you that, you know, we are seeing a slowdown in our economy. And we made the determination then that we're going to come out of this stronger than we went in. and that we're going to take control of the things that we can control. That essentially became the way we work, and that became drive. And we have proceeded with significant urgency, a lot of rapidity, to create these programs that we are confident that we can take out $4 billion of cost in fiscal year 25.
Before we get to how you're doing that, you came here, you sat here, and you said, listen, Jim, I think there will be a recession. Everyone else was still thinking that things were just on this kind of uptick. Where are you now in terms of your view? Because you were so early and so right.
Well, I think, you know, if you remember the conversation, there were three things that we talked about. One was that the industrial economy around the world was slowing down.
Right.
Second thing we said was the U.S. consumer was spending more on services versus products. Right. And third, that there was an e-commerce reset from the highs of the pandemic. All those three things came true. In fact, because of that, our volumes went down significantly. But because of the work that we just did, you know, our third quarter results we announced in March, we were able to improve our operating margins in FedEx Ground and FedEx Freight despite significant declines in our volume. So that's the things that we focus on, the things that we control. And looking ahead, I think the e-commerce reset is about done. We think we're flattening out right now. I do believe at some point here that it goes going to go back to the secular
because
trend.
The 5%. I mean, come on, e-commerce. You have a very low ball number about e-commerce, or we're very worried because I found it worrisome. That's all to pick up the compound annual growth rate at 5%. That seems low to me.
What we're saying is on the e-commerce side of the equation is that e-commerce is going to represent 90% of the growth in the parcel business for the next 5-10 years. So that was the trend pre-pandemic,
right.
And I think we're going to get to that kind of level for the industry.
You couldn't put through together that gigantic dividend increase if you weren't incredibly confident that this is actually going to be year after year cost takeout.
Yes. When we are focused on our structural cost and get more efficient, you know, at some point, we're going to see the revenue picture turn around. If you look at our history of last 20 years, we have grown revenue between 5% and 6.5%.
Right.
So there is significant operating leverage when the revenue comes back.
Okay, now, you talked a lot about personal touch. You also talked about self-improvement. You talked about the idea that the customer is right, but the customer has to do a little more for himself and you'll do more for them. I have here in my hand a list of routes that I could buy. I could get seven routes, total revenue, $913,000, listing price $1 million, Southern New York. Why should I take that in this new route? Should I buy that route?
Well, I think you should, Jim.
Why?
Well, I think this is now the contractor model that you're talking about. It's a great business. We have created a lot of great business folks who now work for FedEx.
But how can you trust those people? You don't know who they are. I take that over with my crew. Why would you let me do it?
Well, we have, the service level standards are established ahead of time.
Okay.
And so we know it's a great opportunity.
All right, because I'm worried about touch, because you go over and over again. This is now going to be much more of a service business. And I want these people to understand what you're thinking.
Well, Jim, the service levels are now at all, you know, pre-pandemic levels. Our service standards are now better than our competition. And so we are actually starting to go back into a share-gaining position, especially into the small and medium customers.
Okay, now, you do list interest rates as a risk, but you point-blank say geopolitical. But in the Q&A, I didn't get enough from that. Where are the real geopolitical risks for your company?
Well, you know, we operate in 220 countries around the world.
Right.
And so, you know, as you can imagine, today's situation is far different than what it was 2, 3, 4,
right,
5 years ago. But I have a fundamental belief that human beings, at the end of the day, they love to trade and travel.
Right.
But systems like a mobile phone, which is already an order entry device, and systems like FedEx, which can get their products anywhere in the world, they're going to find their ways to trade and travel.
There's a great video that Fred Smith put together about how you'll never, the moat, the iconic nature of FedEx. You come in, and you have to protect that moat and what Fred built, because it's an icon. It's an iconic company. But at the same time, you have to break some eggs to make this new omelet. Is it okay internally? What you're trying to do is revolutionary, but you are the best in the industry.
So, Jim, I can only do this because of the strong foundation that's been laid over the last 50 years at FedEx. And, this is a company that has, just to give you an example, Jim, at the turn of the century, FedEx, our share in the ground parcel business was only 10 points.
Right.
Our competition was eight times bigger. And it was because of the innovative business models and the differentiation that we created that we're able to gain share every single quarter for so many years. Now with the emergence of e-commerce, we're building on the success that's been created over the last 50 years under Fred's great leadership, that we are now able to move to the next level. This is an evolution story, and moving to this level at the right time.
Well, I disagree with you. I think it's a revolutionary story, and it is going to be impactful, and the numbers are going to be huge. And you got a great plan. A great plan.
We're very, very excited. That's what
you should be. Yeah, I'm going to go buy that route after I leave here. That's Raj Subramaniam. He's the president and CEO of FedEx. I'm telling you, you've got to redrive. This is not your usual cost-cut change. It's revolution within the most iconic company that's been built in our lifetime. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, Cramer takes your calls, and the sky is the limit. It's a fast fire lightning round. Next.
It is time. It's the lightning round. Chris, remember last week, calls around for early seasons. That's about being your command now. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round, Chris. Let's start with Tyler in California. Tyler.
Hey, big booyah from California. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well, Tyler. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. Hey, I'd like to know, I bought MPC around 114.97. We're at 132. What do you think? Marathon Petroleum.
I like Marathon, Pete. I think you're going to be able to deal with this. I know when OPEC raises prices, that's actually going to hurt the margins. But MPC is very, very inexpensive stock and a very well-run company. I say stay long it. Let's go to Thomas in Georgia. Thomas.
Hey, I'm looking to replace my Intel. I'm looking for above average yield, cash flow that supports that yield, and growth. What do you think about NXP Semi?
I like NXP very much. Remember, it's more industrial. It's got a lot of auto. It's a rally of our own company. I think it's making a move. I'd make that move tomorrow. Let's go to Nick and Merrill. Nick.
Yes. Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Nick.
I'm looking at the stock I'm looking at is Johnson Controls International. Do you think I should?
Here's the problem with Johnson Controls. I mean, this is not exactly what you want to hear, but it's not as bad as it used to be. I just don't think that's as ringing endorsement. I'd rather see in Trane Technologies or Carrier, because I don't want to be in a company that's, wow, you know what? They're not as bad as they used to be. Let's go to David in Texas. David.
Mr. Cramer, how are you?
Hi.
So I think my stock is got a 7% dividend. Been around since 1958. I know they're in big trouble right now. How is KeyCorp?
Okay, I don't think Chris Gorman and KeyCorp are in bad trouble. I think they're not exactly in the best part of the range of the of what I would look at their loan loss to growth of loans. But I don't think that Key's a bad company. I'm not recommending bank stocks, but I don't want to say that Key's in trouble or a bad company. It's a very good company. And if Chris would come on, he would hear good things from me, and I think he'd tell us good things in return. Let's go to Massachusetts with TJ in Massachusetts. TJ!
Jim, some of the best money I ever spent was joining the club. Thank you for all you do for us.
Thank you. I'm working hard for that club. I love the home stretch, which comes in around two-ish. What's up?
Yeah, I've got an opening in my portfolio for a dividend-paying pipeline stock. What do you think about Plains All American?
Let's take a break on Plains All American. I don't want to do that. If you're going to do that, you're going to need enterprise product partners. I want to be in the natural gas liquid. It's a lot less, angst. How about Bill in Florida? Bill.
Hi, how are you, Jim?
I'm pretty good. How about you, Bill?
Doing excellent. I got a significant amount of shares invested in this company that has a very young, smart CEO that I met on 2016. It seems like it lost its mojo. Is it possible that a Sim Q Nelson helps step up pressure on their board and turn things around? The company is Luminar, symbol LACR.
I actually don't know who could turn that around. That's a kind of a not turnaround situation. I'm not going to let you be in that one if I can avoid it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the lightning round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, Cramer's got sold. Tongues are wagging while we lace up to find you a deal that kicks. Next.
See these shoes? They represent one of the greatest dilemmas in investing of all time. These are On sneakers. They're comfortable and athletic. Feel great. More important for our purposes here on money, though, Mellon Holding has been a tremendous winner, at least until it got hit with a brutal downgrade this morning, sent the stock plunging 10%. Even after that decline, though, the stock's up 71% year-to-date and 90% from its lows in December. Which brings me to the dilemma. Do you bring the register here? Or, well, do you let it run? Remember, nobody ever got hurt taking a profit. Banking on more upside in the future, though, could be incredible. First, a little background. I've been a gigantic supporter of Mellon Holding for all the reasons everyone else is. They fit the zeitgeist, and you can pretty wear, I tell you what, you can wear them to pretty much everything except your own funeral. The quarter they just reported was a gigantic upside surprise. Management seems like the kind of team that can roll out all sorts of sports shoes that can double as regular wear in the increasingly casual era. In the end, though, it's almost a faux astonishment because you see these things everywhere and you might have a pair yourself, maybe two. So you can almost expect a strong quarter that we just had, at least, if you have any interest at all in the booming footwear category. But what do you do now with it, now that it's been punched in the face? This morning, Bear, which had been very bullish, downgraded the stock, noting that it could go higher, maybe even as high as 40. However, with Mellon Holding at 32 last night, they didn't like the risk reward. Honestly, I agree. Owens had a tremendous run in a very difficult year for stocks. Bear goes out of its way to be supportive. They like the fundamentals. They think companies that they think the concerns that the company might be over-distributing its products are overblown. Boy, you know what? They even mentioned Nike in the same breath. Although their takeaway is that this stock's expensive when you compare it to the market cap of Nike. Anyone, by the way, besides me, excited for Air, the new Ben Affleck, Matt Damon movie about how Nike got its historic deal with Michael Jordan? Hey, speaking of endorsements, Roger Federer has a very close relationship with Mellon Holding. And while he's an amazing athlete, he's not Michael Jordan, with a shoe that's outlived the man's on-court legacy by a quarter century. And yes, Jordan retired in 98. I don't count the Wizards. I bet most young people around the world who actually wear Jordans don't even know who Michael Jordan is. Anyway, the trouble with Mellon Holding is that you could treat it as a trade or an investment. If it's a trade and you hang on, only to see the stock return to the mid-20s, very bad. You're going to feel like a giant loser, and you are. But thinking as an investor, if you sell the stock here and don't get back into it fast enough at a lower level, I think you're going to miss out on a tremendous move in the next quarter because it could be like Nike or even just the next New Balance. Of course, you can always split the difference. Sell some up here to recoup your initial investment, then let the rest ride because you're playing with the house's money. In the end, they're a bit of a false construct. You have to realize the path to being the next Nike is riddled with companies that got it wrong. Reebok, Fila, Black Knight, most recently Under Armour with a shoe that's lost the teens, at least according to that Piper survey came out yesterday. No matter how much you like Mellon Holding, if you want to bet it'll be the next Nike, that is a long shot. One of the longest shots imaginable. It could more likely be the next Allbirds, a coveted shoe just 2 years ago that turned out to be a disaster for stock today. And that's why I think it's a great idea to take some profits on Mellon Holding here. In the end, though, I'm betting there's enough momentum that it's worth buying back the stock $5 below these levels. I think you can get at least another year of upside before it runs out of steam. Hey, I told you it's a dilemma. But either way, if you bought on holding a few months ago, figuring out what to do now, let's just call it a high-quality problem. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise our adventures for you right here on Mid Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.